Tested is sponsored by Hungry Harvest, offering farm-fresh produce delivered to your door starting at $15. Shop now with code WUNC. Every delivery supports local hunger-solving organizations. Find more at hungryharvest.net.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, is our defense doing enough? The coronavirus is in every county in North Carolina to some degree. In the mountain county of Madison, 90 cases have been identified. Down the road in Mecklenburg, it's nearing 30,000. Whenever and wherever an outbreak occurs, the first effort to contain it involves contact tracing. That starts with a lot of phone calls, as tracers move out in concentric circles, identifying people who may have come into contact with an individual at the center. It's not an easy process, as DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen explains.
Look, we know that in this time, having someone who may be a stranger to you call you and say, hey, can I have the names of your friends and their phone numbers, is not always the most comfortable. So we're trying to share with folks the intent behind this, right, which is to make sure that we are getting in touch with folks who might be exposed because they could be spreading the virus to other people.
It does work, when they can get people to cooperate and answer their questions, it works like a dream. I'm David Borax. I'm one of the reporters at WFAE in Charlotte, and I cover housing and COVID pandemic and all kinds of things. There are examples where it has worked and has helped, I think, to keep down the number of cases and maybe prevent a few deaths. But there are also concerns among a lot of public health officials, especially here in North Carolina, that it's not working too well and that people are not forthcoming with information in the way that they wish they would be. And that's causing some problems. It's leading, I think, to some of the bigger outbreaks that we're seeing.
One of the interesting examples from one of your stories is you spoke with a man from Concord named Cedric Meekins, who was hospitalized with COVID-19. With the help of the Cabarrus County Health Department, he was able to do some effective contact tracing. Tell us more about that experience and what that process looked like for him.
So Cedric Meekins is a music teacher at a charter school in Charlotte, and he went to Ohio for a conference back in March. And, at that time, it was still not clear to a lot of us what the disease was all about and what we needed to do. When he came back, he started to feel bad, and he went to the doctor a couple times, and it actually took him over a week to really get the care that he needed because nobody was really sure what it was. But he ended up in the hospital and on a ventilator at one point.
It did so much damage to me. I literally had to learn to walk again. I lost 31 pounds that time. I had to literally learn to walk. Two nurses had to support me as I learned to walk. I could not hold an ink pen. I couldn't dial a phone. It was so bad.
But after he got out of the hospital and recovered, he was contacted by the contact tracers in Cabarrus, and they asked him, the usual questions. Where have you been? Who have you come in contact with? And they were able to isolate the cause of his illness, probably to that conference in Ohio. They also were able to figure out who he had come in contact with afterwards, friends and family and people at work at the school where he teaches. Fortunately, nobody at the school or that he works with came down with the disease, and he says nobody around him did as well. So there wasn't a lot of forward contact tracing coming out of that, but they were able to see where it came from.
And a big barrier to effective contact tracing, obviously, is sort of that whatever data you get, and it seems to be that there's some resistance from people to share information or to self-quarantine. And you spoke specifically to Mecklenburg County Health Director Gibby Harris about that. What did she say to you about that particular issue of people not willing to talk to contact tracers?
She said it's not going very well. She said it actually that it's not working in Mecklenburg County right now.
There have been occasions when staff have been yelled at because people are tired of this and don't want to hear the information. The other challenge that we have right now is we're hearing people who say, thank you for the information, but I've got to work.
And she said the biggest thing is people being unwilling to, number one, take their phone calls, number two, to share information, and number three, to actually heed the warnings that they get from the contact tracers who call them and say, you know, it looks like you've been infected or you've been exposed to the virus and you should take steps to keep yourself safe after this and to protect yourself from spreading the disease to others. So I think that the biggest thing is just our resistance, and it may be a cultural thing.
And on top of all that, now I learned in your reporting that there's contact tracing scams. How do those work?
Well, that's something that Gibby Harris and the folks in Mecklenburg County brought up at a recent press conference. And they said that people are getting phone calls or texts saying that they're contact tracers and they want them to provide information. Usually it comes from a number with a recognizable area code that makes it look like it's from the health department. And they are asking people for things like financial information or social security numbers. And the folks in Mecklenburg County and at other health departments around the country actually are starting to warn folks that, you know, they are not going to ask for any financial information here and that they should check the numbers where these messages come from and be careful about answering any questions. And it just throws an extra hurdle up for the contact tracers in getting people to comply. And, you know, we all do this. I mean, you answer your phone. It's a number you don't recognize. You hang up.
So, David, there have been some instances of real success, and you found one in Catawba County. Talk about that if you can.
So Catawba County put out actually a kind of a flow chart that showed an instance where there was a family gathering, and 14 family members tested positive after that gathering. And through contact tracing, they were able to link this gathering to 41 cases total. You know, they've told us that thanks to people's willingness to share information, nobody died out of that gathering. And it was a situation where people were willing to be open and honest and forthcoming.
And contact tracing seems to really help in these kind of instances, these so-called super spreader events, and really sort of shutting those down, it seems like.
That's right. And one thing that we have learned from contact tracing around the state is where people are getting the virus. And it's coming, as you might expect, from private gatherings where people maybe are not observing social distance and they're not wearing masks. It's also coming from places like restaurants and breweries and other large gatherings. So we know that these are places where the virus can be spread. And I guess another message that comes out of this is, you know, beware when you're thinking about joining in these kinds of activities and, you know, make a decision for yourself whether you think it's safe.
David Borax is a reporter for WFAE in Charlotte. Up next, examining another tool in preventing COVID spread.
Symptoms or temperature or travel history or, you know, either a rapid saliva test. And what people are looking for is to see whether they would actually accurately be able to predict whether or not you have the virus.
The effectiveness of coronavirus screenings just ahead.
Tested is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't manage without your help. So thanks, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to maybe increase your support.
Walk into a public building these days, whether it's a department store, an airport, or a school, and there's a chance somebody's greeting you at the door with a thermometer pointed at your forehead. The purpose is to determine if you have a fever, which might mean you have COVID. But a recent study shows one-time health screenings like this are hit and miss, and usually more miss.
So we look specifically for studies of screening for symptoms, temperature, travel history, whether you've been exposed to somebody who's known to be infected or known or suspected, rapid nasal or saliva tests.
Dr. Meera Vishnathan is a fellow at the Research Institute RTI International. She's also the director of the RTI-UNC Evidence-Based Practice Center. Vishnathan was the lead author of the study and says coronavirus screenings can miss anywhere from 20 to 100% of infected people.
If you took 100 infected people, they would inaccurately classify 20% of them to 100% of them as being healthy, meaning one-fifth of those people who are infected would go out into the world and infect others. And that's at the best. In the worst case scenario, 100% of those people would be missed. And it isn't that great at even classifying people who are healthy. So if you took 100 healthy people and you did these tests, at worst, it would misclassify 38 of them as being infected. That means a third of the people who are healthy would have to isolate unnecessarily.
There may be some flaws in the screening process, but Vishnathan says it's not a broken system.
So screening can work. It can be effective as long as all these pieces are in place. So, you know, you need more sensitive screening strategies, way more than we have now. You need a good, robust infrastructure, which means that, for example, if you go to get your test done, you need to get your results back quickly. You can't be waiting for a week for the results because you need to isolate or, you know, get your contacts traced. All of that requires a solid public infrastructure. And then people need to be willing to do what it takes to prevent the disease from spreading any further.
It also just strikes me that, you know, I've been through a few of the screenings and it gives you a false sense of security. They might aim something at your forehead, that you don't have a fever, you move on and you think, oh, I don't have COVID. But that gets to what you're saying about sort of that infrastructure that and buy-in, and people need to have buy-in. But there's also just the psychology of people going through life after they've been screened and they feel great about it.
Well, so this is one of the things that I think is becoming more and more apparent, that when you get your test results, what it speaks to is your status or the minute that your swab was taken. And that's only if you had adequate viral load for it to turn positive. So you can trust a positive test. You can't really trust a negative test. So this, again, because so many people are asymptomatic, you can't be sure that you're not passing on the disease to other people. It really falls on all of us, you know, to wear masks, to isolate, to physically distance. Those are the things that we know work.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.